From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. State wildlife officials are rethinking the policies surrounding the recovery of the Florida panther. The Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission recently proposed changing its guidelines. Environmental groups are reacting strongly and criticizing the plan. We'll look at how the proposal differs from the current plan and why the FWC thinks it's time to make a change. Plus, despite decreasing crime rates, prison costs in Florida have nearly quadrupled since the early 1980s. On the heels of President Obama's recent commutations of the sentences of 46 inmates for nonviolent drug offenses, we explore the impact of mandatory minimum sentencing laws in Florida. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Topher Forges. State wildlife officials are rethinking the policies surrounding the recovery of the Florida panther. The state's panther population has come a long way since the late 1960s, where there may have been as few as 30 animals or less. Thanks to conservation efforts, the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission thinks as many as 180 panthers now live in the state. The panther's recovery program is federally run. It's overseen by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, but the state works with that agency, and now commissioners are thinking some changes might be needed. A draft version of a position statement was discussed at a June meeting. It will be voted on in September. Joining us to discuss those possible changes and what they might mean is Jennifer Hecker, the Director of Natural Resource Policy with the Conservancy of Southwest Florida. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We're also joined by Ken Warren, Public Affairs Officer with the United States Fish and Wildlife Service's South Florida office. Ken, thanks for coming on to Gulf Coast Live. And we have Tampa Bay Times environmental reporter Craig Pittman. Craig, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me.
And we also asked a representative from the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission to join us. They were not available. And you can join our conversation. Call 1-800-77-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. So to start, this new outline of a policy has really two central issues that it's taking on. One has to do with what is essentially the only panther population in the state, which is in Southwest Florida. The other issue has to do with establishing other populations in the state, which is a core component of the current plan. So we're going to start with issue number one, this Southwest Florida panther population. The new policy says its population has reached its carrying capacity. Craig, with the Tampa Bay Times, what does the FWC mean when it says carrying capacity?
Well, that's an interesting question. It's presented in the paper just as saying carrying capacity. And when the author of that paper, the executive director, Nick Wiley, sent it to his panther biologists, they objected very strongly to using that term, saying there are no scientific studies that say that panthers have exceeded their carrying capacity in Southwest Florida. That's an opinion, not a fact. But the paper was written at the behest of and edited by one of the commissioners, who is a rancher in Immokalee named Lisa Pretty. And in an email to Nick Wiley, she said that what she meant by carrying capacity is basically that panthers have exceeded the tolerance of landowners in Southwest Florida, that they're eating too many cattle, eating too many domestic pets and so forth, and basically they've kind of worn out their welcome there. And to her, that meant they'd exceeded their carrying capacity.
So the idea is that there's been more, there have been more interaction. And a lot of this paper discusses this idea that there are more human-panther conflicts. Jennifer Hecker with the Conservancy of Southwest Florida, at that June meeting that I discussed, FWC representatives who are part of the panther program said there's been a recent rise in the number of panther roadkills. Panthers are preying on animals like livestock at, higher rates than previous years. Those statistics kind of support this idea of, there needs to be a need to manage the population. But are these signs that the panther population has reached a capacity?
So first of all, carrying capacity is a biological term, and it really means that there are more panthers than that habitat can support, and that's why the scientists were pushing back, because that's an inappropriate use of that term. What we're really talking about here is social tolerance and acceptance, and there is a limited segment of the population, I would say a minority, who has concerns that there are too many panthers, who has experienced adverse impacts from the panthers recovering. They haven't been recovered yet. They're still critically endangered with less than 180 individuals left. So even though we've brought them back from the brink of extinction, they remain to be critically endangered. And there's no indication from a scientific perspective that they are surpassing the habitat. What's happening instead is that that habitat is being lost every day with new developments, mining, drilling, all these types of intensification of land use encroaching out into rural areas and diminishing or destroying that habitat so that these panthers are being compressed, which creates more conflicts and overlap with human development and activity. It also creates more aggression amongst the animals, fights over territory where they kill one another, or the young males are pushed out and killed on the roads. So that's what we're seeing right now is a real negative impact from that encroachment of land use intensification out in our rural lands.
So the paper itself talks about management challenges with, and this is a it's like a 4-page paper. There isn't too much detail, but Craig, when they talk about management challenges, what do they mean?
They primarily mean what Jennifer was talking about, the interactions between panthers and people who now live in what was panther habitat. You have to remember that, as you mentioned, that in the 60s, 70s, even as late as the early 90s, there were only about 20 or 30 panthers left in Florida. They were inbred. They suffered all sorts of heart ailments and other genetic defects as a result of inbreeding. And so the state tried this very bold gamble with the help of the Fish and Wildlife Service, bringing in 8 Texas cougars, a close cousin of the panther, so they could interbreed with the Florida panthers and refresh the gene pool. And the resulting kittens came out, and they were free of the genetic defects, which fueled a population boom to the point now where we've seen that from about 1995 up until now, we've gone from, say, 30 panthers to having, by some estimates, up to 180 panthers. It's probably less than that, but still, that's quite a dramatic growth. And at the same time, a lot of new development has been allowed in that area where panther habitat was. So you've got more panthers than ever being squeezed into an area where they have less area to roam than ever. And so, you know, we've got numerous reports now that we didn't have 20 years ago of panthers peeking in people's sliding glass doors, eating their chickens and their backyard goats. At one point, and this could have been disastrous, a panther consumed a domestic cat that had feline leukemia, and it started to spread through the panther population, which scared all the panther biologists that they might lose them all to this epidemic. And so now they routinely, when they capture panthers, they inoculate them for feline leukemia. So that's another management challenge that they have to take on in dealing with these cats, is they've got lots of interactions with humans. They've got complaints about the loss of livestock, and they've got medical issues that they have to treat at the same time, making sure that, you know, there's not some sort of epidemic or something that wipes out the one and only population of Florida panthers, the official state animal that we've got.
Well, and I would just add that I think that one important thing to remember is that even before the panthers dwindled down to near extinction, that there were a lot more panthers than there are even now. And so farming and ranching are historical land uses that have been in Florida for, you know, over 100 years or more. And those land uses are very compatible with panther habitat. In fact, some of the highest quality panther habitat that is currently being utilized out there is agricultural land, either row crops or farms or ranches. So we know that those two can coincide. There is some limited loss of livestock on occasion, and there are compensation programs in place to help compensate landowners for those losses. There's also efforts made to even bolster those efforts. But we're talking about something very different now, which is now the conversion of those farming lands into residential development. And that is obviously going to create more conflict It's going to be highly incompatible to have urbanized developments and cities out in this last remaining habitat area. It's going to create a lot more roadways, which will result in road kills, a lot more conflicts between humans and panthers. And we're really concerned about what the future of the panther might be with the addition of 45,000 acres plus of development as is being contemplated right now, including lands that are owned by this particular commissioner who helped to draft this position statement.
And I want to bring Ken Warren with U.S. Fish and Wildlife into this. You know, part of this policy is saying that the I believe they called it there was, you know, they don't have realistic options. It's more aspirational than realistic. Ken, do you feel that there is, from the agency's point of view, a need to look and focus more on managing just this population of panthers, as it seems to be outlined in this policy?
Well, for starters, you know, the priority from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is currently the breeding population that exists south of the Caloosahatchee. You know, everything begins and ends with maintaining the health and safety and viability of that population. Because if you lose that population, then you absolutely have nowhere to go and you have nothing. So, you know, that is a priority of ours, and it always has been. Having said that, you know, we value our partnership with the commission and also others who are working with us on what's called the Florida Panther Recovery Implementation Team. One of the things that I think is very important to add to this conversation is the fact that the commission, like I said before, is our partner. They work with us on that team along with reps from other agencies. And one of the priorities that's been stated for that team is to take a look at the current recovery criteria, which talks about three viable populations of 240 animals in different, you know, geographic locations within the state of Florida. So, you know, we are already talking about, you know, even before the commission came out with this draft position paper, we were talking about the need to take a look at that criteria to see if it's still the right criteria. You know, it was adopted in 2008. That's been 7 years ago. And I think there's consensus on the team that now is a good time to take a look at it to see if it needs to be tweaked and see if it needs to be revised. And if so, how? You know, those things are already being discussed.
And I mean, the policy says that there's basically been no progress behind being made with establishing those other populations. What's behind that?
Well, I'm not sure what that means, there's no progress being made, because, first of all, when you talk about the current criteria, remember the number is 240. You know, right now we're thinking officially there's about 180 adults. So in the core central breeding population that we already know exists in southwest Florida. So given what we have with 180, and there may be more, but the baseline 180 figure, we still haven't gotten to the 240 in the core population. And other thing I will add to that is we do know, however, that there are males that are ranging beyond southwest Florida. We, you know, we see that. We hear reports of it. We have telemetry that confirms that. What we don't have confirmation of is any females north of that river. So, you know, we're watching and waiting and hoping that that happens naturally. As recently as February 2012, we had a trail camera on a ranch about 2 to 3 miles south of the river that confirmed that a mother and two kittens were in that vicinity. So we're getting close, and we're hoping that by being patient and that Mother Nature does its thing and this migration north of that river happens naturally, and then when you get females north of that river, then you have a good shot at getting an additional breeding population started.
It seems as if under what's been written, it would end up being sort of the sole responsibility or would be overseen by the federal government itself, as opposed to the
agency. And that's one area where there's a little bit of daylight between us and the commission. We would much rather continue the partnership that we've had. It's yielded pretty good results over the past couple of decades. And we want to make sure it continues. We wouldn't really want to do anything in the state of Florida without having them with us side by side, and we're hopeful that that will continue.
Okay. We're talking with Craig Pittman of the Tampa Bay Times, Jennifer Hecker with the Conservancy of Southwest Florida, and Ken Warren with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Our phone number is 877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or tweet us using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. So this is kind of along the lines of this idea of how much available land is needed to provide a panther habitat. And I want to play a clip from Commissioner never mind, I'm not going to play a clip. But I'm going to ask Jennifer, part of this policy focuses on the push-pull between private landowners and public conservation lands. And it sounds like the policy is really arguing that public landowners are taking on too much when it comes to panther recovery compared with public conservation lands. And I was wondering, you know, what's your take on that?
So we certainly recognize that there are private rights here in play, but I think that we as a nation passed the Endangered Species Act in recognition that there are public resources, including endangered species, that we as a nation want to conserve. And so those laws apply to everyone. The protection of public resources, whether it be wildlife or water resources, no one personal private right can trump the interests of the greater public. And here, there are programs in place to work with private landowners to help compensate them and cooperate with them. We have incentive programs already in place in this area to give these landowners, for instance, additional development rights if they choose to locate their development into less environmentally sensitive areas and areas that are for smarter growth, closer to existing infrastructure. So it's good from a fiscal perspective. It's good from an environmental perspective to do that, and we have tools in place to do that. But to expect that every single landowner is going to voluntarily comply is probably not realistic, and bottom line is it's a legal responsibility of not only the federal agency, but of all Americans to comply with federal laws like the Endangered Species Act. So that does come into play here when you're dealing with a critically endangered species.
So the new policy would leave it up sort of to landowners to comply with them with the to comply with incentive programs?
Well, they have rights. Their rights are right now to build very sparse development out there. If they want to go to this intensified urbanized development, that is actually not a right. That would be something that we would be giving them additional development units to enable them to do. And in return, we can put some constraints or requirements in place as to how they use those development rights. So this is part of our compensation. It doesn't have to necessarily be money. It can be other types of incentives that we are able to give to these landowners to help make it profitable for them to do the right thing.
And you mentioned 45,000 acres of development out east. Could you elaborate on that? The commissioner had a vested interest in?
Yes. So Commissioner Priddy, who was a co-author to this policy position statement, her family owns 2,000 acres, more or less, of land in the Rural Land Stewardship Area, which is in eastern Collier County. And that land is part of a larger development plan, and there is a permit in an application in to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service currently for their ability to go and take habitat. It's called an incidental take permit. And to take endangered species habitat for the Florida panther for the use of development or other intensification of land use. So that is a requirement under the Endangered Species Act if you're going to impact these types of lands that you need to get such a permit. And the timing of this right now is troubling to us because it seems to be short-circuiting that panther recovery implementation team that Ken mentioned, where there was already an effort to work with all stakeholders, including environmental groups and landowners, to come up with these types of recommendations. By them pushing this policy position statement forward, they could be short-circuiting that process and also trying to unduly influence the outcome of this permitting process at the federal level.
And, Craig, I was wondering You mentioned before that this is an opinion paper. I mean, as opposed to you asked if it was a state, state certified biologist paper. a scientific paper, I should say, versus an opinion paper. And I know that you spoke with, you know, the executive director and Commissioner Priddy. What was their reaction when you, you know, asked if this is a biologist-based policy?
Well, I asked, I was talking to Nick Wiley, the executive director. I said, you know, I see your panther biologists are objecting to you using the term carrying capacity and objecting to the way this is set up. And he said, yes, we've had some, I think he called it good-natured debates about the use of that term. And he said, you know, it's not a scientific paper anyway. It's a policy paper. So his contention, I guess, being that you don't have to be scientifically not accurate, but you don't have to use scientific terms in the scientific way if you're writing about public policy. And the question I asked him and the question I asked Commissioner Priddy was, do you think that her being involved in the writing of this paper, and in fact initiating this paper initially, is a conflict of interest since she has lost cattle to panthers? She's losing money. She estimated each calf that she lost to a panther was worth $1,000, and a study actually determined she had definitely lost at least 10 calves to panthers. And the answer from both of them was, no, this is not a conflict of interest. And Commissioner Priddy, in fact, argued that her opinion should be given greater weight because she's someone who is out there on the front lines of dealing with the panther-human conflicts day after day.
And Ken, if FWC does move forward and, you know, vote on this proposal, commissioners are going to look at it in September. What happens next? I mean, how do you feel about it moving forward?
You know, who knows what's going to come out of in the next iteration of the position paper. You know, like I said before, we value our partnership with them. And the encouraging thing is that apparently they listened at the previous meeting because they didn't vote on it and decided to go back to the drawing board, so to speak. So we'll just see what happens.
Okay. And I think that should be all the time that we have. I would like to thank my guests. Jennifer Hecker is the Director of Natural Resources Policy with the Conservancy of Southwest Florida. Ken Warren is Public Affairs Officer with the United States Fish and Wildlife Service's South Florida office. And Craig Pittman is the Tampa Bay Times Environmental Reporter. Thank you all for being here. This is Gulf Coast Live. We'll be right back.
Thank you.